And we're live.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 3 of Beyond Retro, where we talk about all things 80s movies, TV, action figures, even into the 90s and beyond. I'm Nathan Kennedy, and I'm joined here by Joe Amato and Tyler Baker. Guys, how's it going?
Ready to visit Elm Street. I'm feeling pretty scared out of my mind here, too. You know, I'm ready to bare my soul to other grown men that we're talking about the movie that has single-handedly scarred me to this day.
Gets it that bad,
and,
huh?
And I'm going to be as upfront and outlandish about the, you know, everything that movie did to me, because, damn it, you know what? You know, Nathan kind of got to experience a little bit of my reaction to this film probably five, six years ago.
Yeah, he's a huge Woods when it comes to certain parts of that film.
Yeah. He saw it. Yeah, he saw it clear as day too. So.
Well, yeah, this was a movie that. I remember getting the figures. Like they had this one where it was a. It almost looked like a Ken doll. I think you take off. You put the clothes on, take them off.
Nathan's got that.
Oh,
where you make the change happen? I think. Don't you have that, Nathan?
No. I actually don't have that. I know what Joe's talking about, but I have the. No.
You got the.
The matchbox, like with the pull string where he talks.
I'll get into that a little bit later on.
The one Joe's talking about, Matt Hilton has that because he had that at his house. I remember that one too.
I have the pull string one too. I do remember that. That's like one of the first toys that got pulled off the market because they were like, how can you promote a child killer, you know, for kids to buy this? And I remember they pulled it off. But I wanted to show one thing. I kept this from my childhood. I loved it so much. I was like, man, I'm just going to stop wearing it. But I don't know how much you could see of it, but it's the one from part 5. And I don't know what...
Is he getting it holding a baby from the Dream Child? Yeah, it is the Dream Child.
Yeah. I was like, I love the art on this thing. And I've kept it ever since I was a kid. And on the back, it just has some text and stuff. But man, I love this freaking shirt. I don't know how often you see it. I almost want to scan it or something because, man, what a cool piece. Beyond, like I said, the figures and the movies and everything, it had stuff like this. But, yeah, it'll be good to talk about this movie and our first impression. So whoever wants to start off and flow with it, go ahead because I can't wait to hear everybody's story.
I'm going to see. Well, who goes? Well, Nathan, you know what? You started us off with the intro. You started us off with your first impression and the time that Freddy Krueger enters young Kennedy's life.
Hey, I was going to say one quick thing. We have Doongie Forever. He's in the chat room, and he just wanted to let everybody know. He said his babysitter would let him watch those movies. So that's a good babysitter.
That's awesome. Man, Freddy, to me, is... like Tyler was talking about, like he is the reason that I didn't watch horror films for the longest time. I can remember, because I was born in 84, so okay. When I was about 4 or 5, this is when Part 4 and 5 are coming out in theaters. So at that time, like Freddy was just everywhere. I remember the Hotline, the commercials for that, and then I think there was also like to promote. Either Part 4 or Part 5, there was like an MTV special that he did. And I remember my grandparents channel surfing and they landed on that. And I was just like, anytime he would come back on, I would just have to run out of the room because just his voice alone. And I know that by the time we're getting to Part 4 and 5, he became more comedic and not as serious. But to me, it was still scary, even if he was joking around. The story with the matchbox figure, the doll, man, I was 4 and I don't remember begging my dad for it, but he tells the story that Christmas, I was just like, I have to have this Freddy Krueger doll. Please get it for me for Christmas. And I got it for Christmas. And, you know, like the little nets that you can hang in the corner to put like all your stuffed animals and everything in. Mm-hmm. He set it right in the middle. So when I would go to sleep, he would stare at me. And I just, like, freaked out one night and had to get it taken away. I don't know why I wanted it so much. To me, it
I almost feel like that's sense. Probably something your dad made up just because that's how your dad is. Like, I could see him, you know, telling this young boy, that, oh, no, you said you wanted it for Christmas. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he got a few.
Doing that.
Yeah, he got quite a few kicks out of it, I'm sure. Like, he still laughs about it to this day whenever we bring it up. He's like, I really can't believe you wanted that, and yet I'm just going to sit here and torture you with it. That's my dad.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got that. I got the same doll. My aunt used to buy me the horror stuff, so she got me that pull string. She got me the Ken one that, you know, I was talking about earlier, and... Yeah, I remember I just kept wanting to hear him laugh. You know, you kept falling and you'd hear a certain thing, and I just wanted to hear his psychotic, I just wanted to hear that psychotic laugh. But no, the movies for me, I remember the first time I think I've seen it, I was probably, well, I wasn't as young as how you were, I mean, because I'm a little bit older, obviously, but I might have been 10, maybe I was 10, and I went with my brother and sister, my dad, my cousins, and I mean, we're in this, like, it's kind of a smaller theater, but I just remember it was terrifying. I mean, this character, I mean, not only, like, is he somebody that can go into your dreams when he comes out, but it's just, this was before he was joking. So it was the first time I was seeing and experiencing a horror character talking to you. You know, I'm used to Michael Myers. I'm used to Jason, to where they're just looking at you. And that's scary enough on its own, but now you have somebody that's interacting, talking to you, speaking, you know, like, you know, saying, you know, Tina, you know, just all these weird, it's like, oh my God, it's just, it's freaky. And then not only Freddy, but just the stuff that's happening in the movies, you know, seeing, you know, the girl's dead body in a body bag and then just being slid off. And then, you know, the one girl that I think looked like said no running in the halls and had Freddy's sweater, just, there was so much insanity going in that movie that it made you scared to go to sleep. Because, like I said, you were not used to a horror character talking to you like that. And I think that's just what was captivating about Freddy, and especially in the first one. I mean, like you said, years later, he got a little silly. Kind of became, well, yeah, I mean, and he became your buddy.
Wait, we're not associated with New Line Cinema here. If we want to, you know, butcher the hell out of the sequels, we can do that. You know, I think it's safe to say that, you know, we don't need to be polite here about 4 and 5 and 6, you know.
Ooh, they got bad. I mean, not only was he joking, he didn't look frightening. He looked all rubber face. It's like, what happened to that nasty, wet, you know, burn look from part one that was just, oh, God, I mean, he was frightening. It just, he changed throughout the years. But then I do remember that commercial where it said you could call Freddy. And it's a funny story when you're talking about things. I remember... I went over to my buddy's house, and we were obsessed on calling Freddy. And then I think it was about a month later, his mom's freaking out, you know, yelling at him, like, why is my phone bill $150?
Wow.
It was jacked up. And then we, you know, she found out it was us. So, you know, I had to, like, save up to try to help, obviously, pay, because I was part of that madness. But I just wanted to hear Freddy talking to me on the phone. You know, so, you know, you got scammed out of that. But, you know, the movie, what a crazy first impression. Then we go to Tyler, and then we could just dissect through the movie. But, yeah, that was my first impression of the movie. I mean, well, my first experience was at theater with my family and cousins.
For me, it goes with kind of the name of this podcast is Beyond Retro, which is based on the video store that's just up the street, or where it used to be called Beyond Video. And that's where I saw the Freddy VHSs for the first time, that I would go pick up my He-Man tape for the weekend. And then while my mom or dad is kind of going to pick their movie for the weekend to go check out, I'd immediately walk over to the horror section. And just being a child, you're curious about what the scary stuff, because as it's daytime, your parents are with you, you know, and just would look at the boxes, look at the various artwork. And this one right next to me, The Dream Warriors, was a very impressionable picture to me as a kid. I didn't see the first one at that video store. I saw 2, 3, and 4 there. And my aunt was babysitting me, I think, in 88, maybe early 89, when, or just around the time my brother was born. And they had rented part 4. And the only sequence I saw was the sequence where he attacks the girl with asthma in the classroom, and that robot hand comes out of the book. Oh. I didn't know what the hell that thing was, but I felt so bad for that girl, and that's all I remembered. And I wouldn't see actual footage of Freddy until fifth grade on the USA Network, where I caught the second half of the film on a Sunday afternoon. I was outside playing, and I come in, and I think my dad and brother, and my brother was younger than me, and oddly enough, Freddy never bothered him. Chucky bothered him, but Freddy never bothered him. And we all went upstairs, and this is when the only one TV we had was up in mine and Derek's room. And we watched the second half, and I thought, oh, dear God. It was extreme. I cannot stress. And I didn't see the first half, so I didn't see Tina getting killed. I didn't see the alleyway, you know, Tina and all that. I didn't see none of that. All I saw was when Nancy's going to help Rob in jail, and you know, she sees Rob being, you know, attacked by Freddy in his sleep, and from there on, and seeing, you know, Johnny Depp's death, I mean, everything, I don't say it loosely, like traumatizing was the word, and that started the first of many nights of arguing with my parents about desperately trying to sleep in their bed, and then making sure that my brother slept near the stairs, because we slept in the same bed at that time. My mentality was, and it was like this for years, if Freddy comes up the steps, he's going to get my brother first, which allows me to get away. So, and it was like that for years. And then I saw the first half the following year later after I got home from basketball practice, and my brother and dad had rented it. And that was another traumatizing night. And even sleeping in the same bed with my dad, it was like, I'm not safe anywhere from Freddy Krueger. Because then I did see the Tina sequence. I saw all everything else, and it was horrible. I mean, I really felt like I was going to grow up, go to college, be a fully grown adult, and not be able to sleep at all. I mean, I was thinking about that at a young age, like, I'm going to be a fully grown adult. I can't sleep in my own bed. I'll never be able to get to sleep. I'll be haunted by Freddy Krueger for all the rest of my damn life. I mean, it was so mind-numbing to me, and it's still like I own the comic. I have, like, you know, I've had like two versions of it on DVD and stuff like that, but it's it really was something that, and when I hear people trash the film and say it doesn't hold up or it looks hokey, I'm thinking,
really?
Dude, and not just once or twice, I've heard it over the years. Maybe Nathan has heard some similar stuff too. Look, we're talking about the days of the internet where everyone's got a damn opinion, you know. I thought it was kind of hokey, and they got their monocle and their top hat and smoking their pipe, and you know, like, they know so much more about films than anybody else.
I wonder if these are the idiots that are just going by 4, 5, 6, because part one, there's no way I could picture anybody saying that. Oh, my God.
That's what I'm talking about, is that I've heard people say the first film, not a great abundance, because the first film is so heavily celebrated amongst all the Nightmare films, apart from part three. But, I've talked to Nathan about it for years, that, you know, there's certain things about that movie that, like, when his arms grow, like, people will sit there and say, it looks hokey. I'm like, that's why it's scary looking.
Yeah.
Because it looks so gangly and goofy, and he's doing it just to, you know, screw with Tina. You know, she's out there in her panties, and she's got nothing to help her out. She's in her panties, and they're probably all wet from earlier and stuff like that. She's in her panties. And,
no, you're right. I mean, that is. I mean, it's supposed to be. It looks silly, but that's supposed to be.
And the way it's shot, too, that's another thing. And Joe had mentioned that Freddy's face, you know, it probably could have helped more had they lit Robert's face a hell of a lot better than the sequels. Because you watch that first Nightmare film, I mean, Wes did such a great job of making sure that when the one was shot, that Robert's face is only lit to a certain degree where all you can see is his eyes and barely know that he's smiling at times. Because that's what adds to the creep factor about that. I mean, where he pops out behind the tree and goes, Tina, and then chops his fingers off. All you can see is that he's smiling in his eyes. And you're like, dude, this is some, you know, like, to quote Eddie Murphy, this is some scary shit.
It was.
You know?
I mean, really. It's sadistic. I mean, you're right. That is sadistic. That's a part. You don't, you know, as you said in the later sequels, you know, you're seeing him just, his entire face lit up, all rubbery, not wet. It's nothing to be anticipating of fright, but when you're seeing the sadistic lunatic, you know, saying, Tina, watch this, and chops off his fingers and looks back and forth and is smiling, you know, with pleasure of what he's doing and how he's...
It's so weird. It's just... That's what I was telling Nathan when we went to go see it. You know, it's just... dude, you don't have to explain what the hell's going on. It's just a weird, creepy visual, which is why the It remake was so good. Sorry, Doug. but that's what makes the first Nightmare so damn good. For a movie that was made in 1984, over 30 years old, I mean, I still, aside from the first Halloween, and to a certain extent the second Halloween, there's not a horror movie that I find to be just as creepy all these years later. And when I watch the hole monitor waving her fingers with Robert's voice and Tina in the body bag in the music, you know, I'm talking too much. Nathan, get your words, get in here.
I'll go back to a couple of points. You were mentioning about how some people say that, you know, the movie doesn't hold up or it's hokey. I feel like maybe that's kind of two minds. It may have been people that go back and watch it and aren't really super into movies. They're just like, oh, whatever, it was kind of lame. And I feel like another part of it might be like a younger generation that have unfortunately grown up on like the Saw films.
Paranormal Activity and all that crap. Like,
yeah. I feel like that's where most of that comes from. Going back to the video store, I know Tyler and I have talked about this because I used to do the same thing. I'd go in there with my parents and I would kind of like saunter over to the horror films. And Tyler and I always laugh because we would go over there and just the box art on some of these films were just scary enough that we would have to run away.
Oh, really? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, looking at Dream Warriors right here, when you've got Freddy's hand is holding, which to me it looked like fully, I mean, to me, they were high school or college kids, at least from my perspective. Like these, you know, this punker girl, this guy with the maze, and this, you know, girl dressed in white, she looks so scared, and this one guy over here is holding a baby. I mean, they're going to go tackle Freddy. I'm like, this is just, your mind just doesn't know how to comprehend such an image when you know nothing about the character except what you see on the box of that VHS.
Yeah, and that was the appeal. I mean, when you see that, it would just draw you in to whether it freaked you guys out to where you ran or it made you want to pick it up because it looks so horrific, which, again, is something you don't see in movies nowadays, especially promoting the stuff, posters or box art or whatever it is, or clamshells. There's nothing.
But you look at the Nightmare VH cover, and I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, like you see it, and because on VHS, most like Freddy is pretty much cut out. You just see the hand over Nancy's face. You don't see the kind of skull slash muscle like motif that whatever. I grabbed a VHS. I got it over there on the shelf, though.
No, I know what you mean.
You couldn't tell what it was,
right?
And that was just a not to mention like when you watch the movie. And the media, like that it was called Media, which was like the distribution company for the VHS, pops up. I always associate media with being scared out of my mind of Freddy Krueger with the Media brand.
You know, talking about another part of the movie earlier, things that, you know, some people would joke saying, oh, it's not spooky, but let me tell you something. There's a part
they go to hell. That's what I say.
Yeah, there's a part to explain about the movie why it's spooky, and then in real life. The part, like you said, when he's stretching his arms out, but then right after that, he does this psychotic little crazy run after Tina. That spooked the hell out of me.
Yeah, me too.
Tyler, that some people joking like, oh, he looks like he's running like a little weird troll or like they didn't think it was Friday. And I'm like, let me tell you something. Picture yourself walking down the street and it's 10 o'clock at night. And there's just somebody walking to the other side of the street, all calm. And then suddenly they turn and look at you and start doing a crazy run at you. You can't tell me that wouldn't spook you out of nowhere when you're not expecting somebody to come. So not only is she seeing somebody that's horrific, he's going to run at you. You bet that's going to scare the crap out of you. So I, for all these people that want to say that run looked like a troll and it wasn't scary enough, I can't even picture where they're getting this from. Because that was frightening. And I frightened me, frightened Tyler, Nathan, I don't know about you, but I hated that run. I hated it. And he's laughing as he's doing it. You know, like some crazy cackling. That freaked me out.
Yeah. And Robert's laugh is done. I mean, his voice, the laugh, I mean, it never got any better than that. Every film after that, it was a little more gruffer, you know, like in Nightmare 3, it was really deep in Nightmare 2. But in this, it was a cackle. It was like a male witch. I mean, just his. Yeah. I can't think of a better way to describe it other than that, because it was, you know, it was very soft too, you know. But when he last you'd hear that cackle. He didn't cackle in any of the other films.
I mean, and it made it spooky. And I was going to say, you guys keep going for a second. I got to get out of this hot box because I can't see.
Okay.
Keep going. I'll be back.
I was going to say, well, when did you actually see the film for the first time, Nathan?
The first time I saw the film, because I was a huge wimp when I was a kid. You know, like all that stuff with Freddy at that age. And then a couple of things that my dad did, too, with like the Chucky story that I've told you before. And maybe I'll shed some light on that at some point this month. I actually didn't watch that film until, man, I was probably like 11 or 12.
So you're probably around my age then.
Yeah, it took a while for me, yeah, because there were certain films that sort of broke the mold, and I'm just like, all right, yeah, I can finally start giving these things a shot. Maybe they're not so scary, but I still found myself, like, really just tensed up then. And it's kind of funny looking back on it now, but what Joe was talking about with, you know, all the effects, and you were talking about the lighting. I mean, one of my favorite parts is when, you know, Nancy's laying in bed and he just comes through the wall.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a simple effect, too, the way that they did it. And every time I watch it now, it just makes me think of the shitty remake and how they decided to go CG. And it looks awful. Like, if you watch those two side by side, like, there can't be anybody that would agree that that scene in the remake was done better than it was in the original. There's just no way.
There's actually a guy I work with who made a point to tell me he thought the remake was a lot better than the original. And it was all I could do from not picking up and throwing him in the dumpster out back.
I probably should have,
because I mean, that's not the first blasphemous thing you said about classic films over the remakes. But, I lost my train of thought. All right, repeat to me what you just, the scene you were just telling me about.
About where he's coming through the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. What makes that so cool looking, too, is that you can't tell what the hell it is at the moment. Like, if you had never seen the film, nothing about Freddy, like, you can't tell what the shape is. Like, you kind of see it come up, and then it comes down even lower. And when you watch the documentary on it, find out what it's just this, like, fabric with some guy behind it just making this motion on it. It just looks cool as hell.
Yeah. It's almost, I think that it was, like, trampoline, almost.
Trampoline mat, some sort of mesh, really soft, flexy material. I don't. That
probably a little more give to it than a trampoline, but I know it was something that they used that was similar to that. And I guess the other scene that always sticks out to me, especially when you see how they did it, is Tina's death. You know,
oh god,
like it's just that so was, cool looking.
Oh yeah, and the way it's, and of course it's edited perfectly too. So where it's like a flawless, you know, from the slash of her belly, and then she's, you know, moved up in midair up to the ceiling, which I mean, she just flip flopping all around, and I mean, god, man, it was such a
That was a freaky death. You're right. I mean, seeing her first like in the air, you know, being like kind of like spun around, and then you said hit this wall, and this one just going around the entire thing, all that blood. Yeah, that was disturbing. And as simple as the one, how it looked, but it was still gross, was just even seeing Johnny Depp's death when he gets sucked into the bed.
Yeah, boy, I mean.
Wow, that
to see that as a young kid, and I love Johnny Depp because I was a big fan of Edward Scissorhands. I'd watched him on 21 Jump Street, and then to see this, you know, it was, you know, you're kind of, I mean, you really, in every sense of the word, left speechless when you're watching Johnny get pulled through that bed. It could, you know, as a child, you've never seen anything like that before, and still to this day, you still haven't seen anybody pulled into a bed. And a gusher of blood, and not to mention the creepy ass music that's playing during all of this. I forgot what his name is. Something Bernstein, Charles Bernstein, I think, is the guy who did the score for Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, it just makes everything, you know, that much more creepier. And I know the deleted scene was that Johnny Depp was supposed to come back up out of the bed covered in blood and fall down dead, but it's creepier knowing that, no, he was just obliterated by Freddy in his own bed. It's just weird.
I agree.
Weird.
I agree. I'm weird. Glad. Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to see him come back up either. Just to know that he went down and all that came up was blood, you would just picture, you're right, that's what happened. He just went down and just pieces of him, blood and guts and everything. He was just turned to just gush in blood. That is just, like you said, it's disturbing. The whole movie, I mean, you know, like when we were talking about earlier where you said that maybe the younger generation, you know, like, you know, they're used to Saw or they're used to Paranormal Activity. And, you know, I was talking with Tyler about this, Nathan, that what fascinates me about Saw is basically it's just a gross you out movie. You know, there's not a real horror killer. It's like everybody's putting these traps. You must get your way out, you know, like you're 30 seconds. You know, like, who cares? I mean, sure, for people that want to be into just grossness, yes, but it's not a scary movie. It's a gross you out movie. That Paranormal Activity, I remember, again, I sat there and watched that first one. I was like, what's supposed to be scary about this? I'm watching these people talk like they're on a reality show. And then after over an hour, then, ooh, you see something move. It's like, oh, wow, I'm frightened. You know, I think that if this new generation, some of them, let's say, are just picking on Elm Street, like, oh, it's stupid. I bet you half of them didn't even watch it. They're just thinking, it's 80s, it's old. You know how it is sometimes people hear a year in their mind, oh, that's an old movie, I want to watch it. I guarantee you, you sit down
they're and not,
watch
they're it. They're not a fan of film then, too, because, I mean, as we'll get into later on, I was a fan of the Universal Monsters as a kid. I didn't look at it as, that's before my time. You know, I look at those and I'm like, those are some cool-looking monsters. You know, I like to see more about that. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, well, Halloween. You never hear anybody say anything negative about the first Halloween ever. I think it's probably that maybe the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre of all the first film. Well, Child's Play's in that one. All right. Poor choice of words there. I'm just thinking, why is Freddy always seems to be there's a mixed bag? Whereas people look at Hellraiser, the first Child's Play, the first Texas Chainsaw, the first Halloween. Four films there, all very old films, are all spoken very highly about, and you don't hear a mixed bag of reactions about any of those four. You know, you guys have told me before that, you know, the first Friday film, I can understand. It's a much slower paced film than probably the first three are quite slow in pace. I will say that. Even though I like the first three, I understand what people would feel like it's taking forever for things to get off, but the films are only an hour and a half, kind of shows you, you know, speed up things a little bit. But I can't understand why people look at the things we're talking about. And maybe they're not looking at, you know, maybe, you know, because I find it hard to believe that looking at Robert's portrayal of Freddy in the first film would be considered a dime store monster to teenage boys right now or, you know, guys in college right now who are, you know, all about, you know, these, you know, Ouija board movies, all these PG-13 no balls movies that are coming out that have been plaguing cinemas, you know, for well over a decade. To look at Robert Englund walk into Rob's jail cell and sees Nancy open the window screaming, you know, telling him to wake up. He looks up and just smiles at her. Doesn't say a single word, but just looks up and smiles as he's getting ready to strangle Rob in his sleep. Just simple stuff like that.
I think
how was that not found creepy by younger kids?
I just really, I'm thinking a lot of these ones just haven't experienced. They say they've maybe seen it, and they haven't, or they just don't want to see it. But I guarantee you, they see that first Elm Street, it's going to freak them the hell out to where they'll never think of a stupid Saw or a Paranormal Activity. Because they are, I mean, like I said, it holds up. It is super creepy. I couldn't, like, you know, and another thing that I appreciate that, you know, like the special effects back then were different to where a lot of it, you know, they're using actual animatronics, like you were talking about with that screen, you know, that felt like almost like a trampoline material. That's spooky. But then these newer movies, like, I couldn't remember if they tried to recreate that for the new Nightmare on Elm Street.
They did.
But you could tell it's CG and computer. It's like, and no, I'm not feeling this. Some movies don't need that. And horror movies shouldn't. Like when they did it to Jason X, it's like, oh God, why are you putting special effects? And here's another character. I mean, this will be for another topic on another episode coming up. But Pumpkinhead. Damn, do I love some Pumpkinhead. Well, after all these years, you know, they made those couple back-to-back sequels just a few years back. They had to use that special effects. They shown them jumping off roofs and you could tell it's a computer generated. I'm like, I'm not into this. And don't tell me. I don't want to hear from people saying, but no, it is special effects and you got to move it to times. No, sometimes it don't work. And it definitely doesn't work in these horror movies.
I mean,
like, they had a guy in a suit.
Yeah. And sorry, I just, sorry, no, you're good. Just the special effects going on that, like Pumpkinhead. It looks good because it's real and you can see it. It's not something that's you're looking at a green screen and have to react to. And like John Carpenter's The Thing, another perfect example of really good special effects. Just things that are kind of a lost art now, but you can kind of see independent filmmakers, especially the horror ones, that like you see that little bit of inspiration there. So I feel like hopefully this newer generation can maybe dig up some of these independent films that are coming out now that are like pretty well done that have those special effects. And maybe that will kind of be like, oh, well, maybe I should go watch these. Yeah. And at least maybe appreciate them. Maybe if it doesn't scare them, at least appreciate them and not shit on them so much like they do.
You know, and you're right, and half the time they have to have people that are older relatives, an uncle or an older brother, to say, go back and watch this, because if they don't, but it's just usually it's ignored and they just don't see it. But, you know, you figure it's like now everybody's in retro kicks, retro for video games, retro for this. Like, okay, let's pray you go back and watch the first Elm Street, Halloween, Friday the 13th, you know, get into them and see what started it all. Like, nothing, just to say real quick, though, real quick in the chat room, Doogie Forever, he also said he was scared of clowns, but he said he wasn't too scared of Freddy Krueger. He says he thinks it's because he had the NES game, so that could be a weird interpretation, but he said...
There's no way in hell I was playing that as a kid. No way.
And he said, I never saw the early movies, I think. He said, I saw 4 and beyond when he was little. So I don't know if Doogie, if you're telling me you haven't seen 1, 2, and 3, but if you haven't, see 1, 2, and 3. That's when they were good, because once it went to 4, it really went downhill. 3 was still cool, but it was borderline because it was the beginning of the wisecracking. And once it hit 4, 5, 6, zoom, went right down. So please go back, you know, for your sake, you know, in the chat room and anybody else who's listening, you got to see the first Elm Street, 2 and 3. I mean, but you got
to
see the first.
You shouldn't be here listening to this conversation if you haven't seen the first Elm Street movie. I will just put it that way, you know. But then again, maybe it's not so much a bad thing because we're emphasizing the things that when I hear people talk about it, like I don't hear people talk about the way Robert's face is lit. I don't hear them talk about, you know, certain moments that, you know, why him running down the back alley after Tina was creepy. Like, you don't hear people elaborate these small points that we're talking about here. So I take that back. If you haven't, you know, seen it and you are interested in it, listen to what we're saying here, because we're trying to emphasize that, you know, to me, this is the scariest film of all time, in my opinion. You know, I mean, I've had more actual dreams about Jaws than I have about Freddy Krueger. I think maybe I've had one in my life about Freddy Krueger. I've had more dreams about Jaws in my life than I have anything else. But Jaws does not scare me, you know, as opposed to, you know, watching the first Nightmare on Elm Street. Unless of course I found myself in the ocean, then I can't help but think of little Alice Kittner being blown to pieces and, you know, after he's been gobbled up by Jaws. But I make no bones about it, man. That movie scared me so badly as a child. And maybe part of what I'm feeling like is but there's a lot of horror movies. Like when I watched some of the Jason films as a kid, like Friday the 13th Part 8, as a youngster, not real young, but there were certain moments that I thought were kind of creepy. I watch it now, it goes over my head. I'm just enjoying this fun 8th installment in this classic franchise. You know, the first Chucky still got some creepy stuff in it, but it does not drum. It does not. You know, it doesn't register in my head is like, oh man, boy, that's really creepy as hell, man. It's a lot of it's probably due to the childhood trauma I went through from watching that first.
That is a half hour experience. It's like movies that can still creep me out. Definitely the first Elm Street and Friday the 13th Part 2 and Part 3. There's just moments in that just are unsettling to me.
I can't remember if me and Nathan, because I know Joe is about, because me and Joe have talked about Friday, and me and Nathan have talked about horror movies for over 10 years. But just talking about, and I know Joe, when Joe mentions Friday the 13th Part 2, I know what he's talking about. Remember Friday the 13th Part 2, Nathan, when Jenny's inside Jason's cabin, she's looking around, and you see out of the side of the shot, Jason's running towards the cabin. And there's no noise. You just see it before she does. You're like, jeez!
That's it. It's funny you bring that
stuff
up.
Like that.
That is the part. That's the part. And right now you said that, I was actually getting chills.
Yeah.
If it's nighttime and I'm watching that scene, even to this day, just scares the crap out. I hate it's that part. Weird, when man. She looks and you see that running, it's like, oh God, and he's running up to the door. I hate that. I just hate it. The other part I hated as a kid, and still can freak me out, was the dream sequence at the end of part 3 of Friday the 13th. When she's in the ball,
that,
and you see him clamoring at the windows, and he's bloody, and you hear him going, I'm like, oh,
it's like a pig man.
Yeah, I hate it. Oh, God, I hate that. So, yeah, we'll be hitting our Friday the 13th eventually, too. But, no, you know, what's another thing about Elm Street that just made it so memorable is, you know, we were used to other types of horror killers. You know, like Michael Myers has a butcher knife that he's known for. And, of course, Jason with the machete. But here comes something so unique with that claw, that glove. It's just so freaking iconic that you never seen nothing like that. And it made it creepy, you know, the little sound effects. Or then just the way he played with the finger knives. It's like, God, I love that they created something like that. I don't know what made Wes Craven think of it, but God, I'm glad he did, because yeah, that's got to be one of the most iconic horror weapons you've ever seen.
See, that's why Joe and Nathan, I'm going to break this to you live, because Joe confided in me, so I'm going to embarrass him right here live on the podcast.
Oh, Lord.
Joe has never seen Never Sleep Again, the Elm Street documentary series.
No, I was trying to get it. Every time I went to the store, I could not find it, and I was like, I guess I'd have to resort to eBay, but I never got it, unfortunately. Wait,
and they explain the origin of the glove, like the concept behind it, and what was, you know, the idea behind it was what was the oldest weapon that man would be afraid of, and it said the claws of an animal. And that's where that was the germ for the idea of the glove.
Okay.
I think the concept itself, if I'm not mistaken, Tyler, you can correct me on this. Wes Craven heard about this news story about someone who, I think this was in the Philippines, and he was asleep, and I think he woke up and said someone was out to get him, and he wasn't, like, sleeping, I think, for a couple of days, and when he finally did go to sleep, he, like, died in his sleep.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was in the documentary you guys are talking about?
Yeah, and I had heard about that before the documentary had come out, but that it was based on a, and I didn't know the extent of, like, you know, where it was or anything like that, but yeah, it was based on a boy that was convinced someone was going to kill him in his sleep and stayed up, I think, for two straight days for sure. And I think on the third day, because he'd been hiding in the sleeping pills, he had a Mr. Coffee machine in his room and finally fell asleep. His parents came in on while he was screaming and yelling, thrashing on the bed, and died in his sleep.
Wow.
And then, and when that's, Wes is like thinking, like, well, who, you know, who could have been in those dreams trying to kill this boy, you know, who, you know, it, you know, and then he gives the idea too, like the inspiration for Freddy was a guy when he was, wherever he was living at, there was a guy walking down the street late at night and caught Wes as a boy looking at him throughout the window and stopped. And it freaked Wes out, so he hid. He went back to the window, saw the guy was still standing there, and then lurched at closer to Wes. And the guy resembled the kind of image of Freddy in that first film.
I'm glad you said that. See, that's what I mean. Think of those creepy things, just that moment. So for anybody, when we were talking about earlier, to have somebody running at you down a dark alley like we've seen Freddy do earlier in the movie, you can't tell me that wouldn't be petrifying to you if you've seen that in real life. If just to look out a window, seeing somebody looking at you standing and staring, and then suddenly lurch forward. Yeah, you're gonna have some sleepless nights. So,
yeah, stuff like that. Because I know me and Nathan said, like, the only redeemable scare about Scream 3 was watching Neve Campbell's mom in that movie walk across the field.
Yeah.
From a distance, you know, you're just like, oh shit, man. You know, sorry for the language, but it was just one of those things when you're seeing somebody approaching from a distance and they're still coming and there's nothing you can do about it, especially when you're watching the film. You know, it's that kind of, you know, it's simple storytelling, simple scare tactics, and a visual that costs nothing. It costs nothing to have an actor walk across, you know, a part of land out of focus, and they're coming and coming and coming and coming and coming. It's just, it's effective. Yeah, it's effective filmmaking.
Yeah. It's kind of another lost art. I feel like they rely too much on jump scares now.
Yeah, everything like requires a lot of bang to help sell a scare. Instead
I mean, it's good to have jump scares.
Yeah.
You know, but to just every 5 minutes have one and not have the creepy visuals. Like, even today when I watch newer films, anytime there's a visual that's just something that reminds you of another time that, like, maybe something you've experienced, like walking down a dark alley, you know? Like, That's the fear, not the jump scares for me. That's never done it for me.
Well, you can scare somebody at your place of work by walking in on by accident. That's a jump scare, you know. I'm like, yeah. Anybody can do that.
Yeah,
you know, but not everybody can be scared by, you know, something that you see walking to your car when you're out shopping late at the mall or something like that in a parking garage, or you're, you know, you go to the bathroom and you're afraid of a balloon's going to come inflating out of it and burst in your face like in the original It or something like that. You know, it's really a lost art. And, you know, I blame studios and I blame the hack directors who aren't really trying to get creative. It's more about what can we get away with doing and do as little as possible, whereas these guys were trying to be innovative. It was all done cheap, too. That's another thing. When you look back at the horror movies we've talked about, all of them, from Halloween, First Friday, Nightmare on Elm Street, they were all done on extremely dirt cheap budgets. You know, I mean, every one of them, you know, they cost such little money, you know, to the point where, like, New Line Cinema was going to have to go under if Nightmare didn't take off and be the success that it was. Friday the 13th, I think cost under $1 million to make, and of course it made tons of money back. And Halloween was the most successful independent film for I think probably over a decade when it came out for its little budget. I mean, and all Halloween was having a guy stand behind a car, stand in front of a house, stand in the backyard amongst the laundry, scares the hell out of the entire, you know, country.
Exactly, just it worked. You didn't need to see him.
Simple visuals.
Yeah, you didn't need to see him, but when he finally showed up in those certain scenes, it made it that much more frightful.
Yeah.
You didn't need to shove him in your, you know, everybody's face all the time. I think that's what just doesn't work with a lot of movies nowadays. And the other thing is, I mean, what do we see at the theaters? There's no horror characters. There's no icons. Like you said, all we're having are the paranormal activities. We were having the songs. We're having all these gimmicks. And then now we're having the other things with oh, Jesus, what is it, where it's always this new doll Annabelle or something. I don't know, it's just...
Trying to recreate, which Chucky was not the first killer doll, but Chucky is the most iconic killer doll, and they're not going to be able to top the formula that was put together in that first Child's Play. So, yes, but they've done it. They did Dead Silence, which was another crummy old lady with her dolls, and you got this Annabelle stuff, and...
But just, yeah, like I said, I don't think... With what they're doing... And obviously, with seeing this, I'm hoping with them seeing the success of It and what it's done. I mean, like you said, it was a great 80s miniseries that was, yes, then put onto a VHS for a movie. And yes, it was based off a book, but still, a horror character, a frightening character. I'm hoping they can finally see, let's try to not only create new ones, but if you want to bring back, like everybody's been waiting, when is there going to be a new Friday the 13th? We were expecting it for years and years and years, nothing. But now we're going to get another Halloween after all these years. But I'm hoping it revitalizes it, because there are no iconic horror characters that anybody that I can think of that are memorable nowadays. Because I don't include anything from Saw. There is not a horror character. I'm not including Saw. I can't think of nothing. I can't think of a horror character. It's crazy that you think the last one that was super memorable was Freddy, but yes, we got Chucky, you know, we got Candyman, we got Pumpkinhead, we got others, Leprechaun, but we need more of that. So that's why I'm hoping that It has brought it back, because It has been doing super successful.
Well, It himself, Pennywise the Clown, has been quite popular, I mean, for a long time. I mean, it's...
But it shows it's still there, you know what I mean? It shows he's still hot and that type of thing's successful.
Yeah, but I... But see, and this is what worries me about Part 2 when it comes out, is setting a horror movie in current day, whereas the It remake was done, what took place in the 80s. I feel like having the lack of technology, the lack of the internet and things like that in a horror movie, which I think helps make the original Halloween, like the new Halloween, it's going to be set in modern day with Jamie Lee Curtis's Laurie Strode being a fully grown woman. She has a daughter, which is played by that obnoxious girl from the phone commercials. You know, and I'm like, oh, damn it.
Real quick, I don't want to be spoiled because I haven't seen the new It. You know, you don't have to. But
I wasn't going to say anything to spoil it for you.
Well, no. I just want to ask one thing. Just it would ease my mind. When is the time supposed to be set for that?
1988 to 1989.
Oh, so I see what you mean. So when they do the second part.
When they do the second part, they'll be fully grown adults living 27 years after that, so it's 89. I can't do math in my head to save my life.
2016, I think.
2016,
I think.
So it'll be, Yeah.
Do you think they're going to try to avoid, like you said, modern technology since it wasn't in the original book? Will they avoid it?
Well, I mean, it's like when I think of this, this is one of the first things I thought of. I'm like, if they do like the sequence where they're gathering the troops and you're seeing what the kids are doing as fully grown adults, I'll say Richie for one. Is Richie going to look at his cell phone and get weird images on his cell phone? You know, like make sure you use social media, you use cell phones, you use computers and laptops and, you know, any kind of electronic devices and TVs and stuff like that. Whereas, Pennywise is featured on TV and, you know, once or twice in this one, but it just kind of feel like, you know, the lack of technology, you know, it helps isolate your protagonist in the film. Like in the first Friday the 13th, as slow paced as it is, you feel like all these guys are doomed. There's not even a phone on the camp premise. So these guys are all out on their own. So just knowing there is no technology, that you can't call the police, or if you did, it takes a while, or you're not relying on social media. I mean, when they're making movies called Unfriended, where people are screaming at their, like, as we're talking right now, because they're going to die on Facebook, go to hell, man. You know, it's like, that's not scary, man, unless you're one of these people who likes to sit there and troll everybody on your Facebook page and stuff like that. And that's just our world coming to?
I was hoping you were going to tell me that it was taking place in the 50s and then that the sequel would be like around the
80s. And it's, I mean, there's some fun nods because I thought, like, you know what? They actually went very specific with the years that the movie takes place in with the references that throw in. Nathan knows what I'm talking about when I say that. I'm like,
yep.
Oh, that was a nice touch for 88. I like what they did for 89 there. Oh man, my nipples are hard. You know, it was just nice touches, but they're not beating you over the head. Hey, look at this. It's the 80s, isn't it? It's cool. It's retro. Everyone likes vintage, right? You know, they're not doing that because that's not what it's about. It's just small little touches in the background that let you know that this was going on in this particular summer or year. And there's no, you know, there's not technology. The kids are still being kids because, well, as we can all say, being, you know, 4 or 5 years old and at the late 80s and then into the early 90s, being kids, you didn't have technology like that. What you have is your imagination and what was in your backyard and in your neighborhood and a bike,
yeah.
You know, which is what these kids have. And, I mean, which makes something like the Monster Squad still such an enduring classic because they're kids being kids. It turns out this stuff is real.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me about the second part. But I have full faith that the second part will be hopefully almost as good as the first part. The first part was surprisingly extremely good. It really, really was. And, I mean, when they remade Nightmare, it took place in modern day. I mean, I broke the cardinal sin that I swore I would never do in the theater, and Nathan was with me. Went to go see the late night showing. 20 minutes in the film, I said, "Oh my god, I can't believe they're going this route with this movie." I pulled my phone out and started texting this really hot girl I had just went out with. I want to strangle people when I see phones out in the movie theater. And at this point, I've never done it since in movies that I did not like. But during the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, I pulled my phone out and started texting. I'm like, "This movie sucks. I wish I was with you instead."
Yeah, it was funny sitting there when he pulled his phone out, and I like looked at him, and I just sort of shrugged. I'm like, "Yeah, this is gonna be awful." Like, I was drunk right now or something. Like, it was, yeah.
Going
back on the technology thing, I'm hoping that because I'm imagining the same writing team from the first part one is going to be writing part two. And they did that well enough. I imagine that they'll probably minimize the technology.
Yeah,
because, I mean, you think about the Friday the 13th reboot, you know? That was done recent enough, and I don't really recall them relying too heavily on technology.
They didn't. You're right.
No, they didn't. That's a good point. They didn't, you know? Whether you like the characters or not, some of them, you couldn't wait for them to die. But, the use of cell phones and cameras and all that stuff, was used extremely minimal in that movie. So, yeah, that's a good point. And these guys took such great care in this It remake that, you know what, I'd like to think that they will do the exact same thing with Chapter 2.
Yeah, well, you can only hope so, and I still got to see it, by the way.
Go see it, Joe. And
yeah, hey, Joe is like, I can't, man. I just can't.
And get the documentary for Nightmare.
Yeah.
And I have to get that, you know, because, you know, going back to, you know, first Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, when we heard about, you know, the parents, you know, they're the ones that, you know, killed Freddy or burned him or whatever. You know, I always loved it, and it was interesting. I was telling Tyler about it, the TV series Freddy's Nightmares. That's what was cool about that, is that's the first time we got to see about Freddy getting burned, you know. It's like, out of all things, on a TV series, and that's such a hidden gem. So many people don't know about Freddy's Nightmares. I mean, I don't know if that's ever even been on DVD. I mean, do you know, has it been put on DVD?
It's been put on VHS a few times, because I picked up one at a Big Lots.
But not DVD, though?
I don't think so, and probably rightfully so, if you go back and watch them.
And you know, that's another quick little side topic. You know, you think about those, you know, the movies we liked, you know, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Halloween, whatever. Well, when I heard about, like, you know, the Friday the 13th was going to be a series, oh, man, I remember I was doing backflips. Because, again, remember, this is before the time of internet and everything, where you're going to just, hey, what's going to happen? And I see this, I'm like, wait, what's this? Where's Jason? Or, oh, wait, maybe one of these episodes will have a backstory. So I stuck on for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm not going to watch this about cursed items. They just used the Friday the 13th logo and moniker to try to suck you in. I was like, man, I don't want to see it. And, you know, it could have ended up being a great series for what it was, but it wasn't what I was expecting. Then you go to Freddy's Nightmares. Now, the first one, it was cool. You got to see about
directed by Toby Hooper, I believe, too.
Oh, okay. I have no clue that. All right. Well, anyway.
The guy who directed this. Joe, you cannot be on this podcast about horror movies and not know who Toby Hooper was.
Sorry, it happens sometimes. I just don't know the directors, producers.
Are you serious? All right. And also, you have no idea who Toby Hooper is.
I'm sorry.
Nathan?
Nope. Wow.
Tell him.
He said, wow.
Toby Hooper directed the first Chainsaw Massacre. I want to say he directed the second one, right?
That one, he directed Poltergeist, he directed Eaten Alive.
Sorry, back then I just watched them, I didn't even know half the directors.
You're too busy playing, watching Extra and making out with chicks in the movie theater, probably.
There you go. So, well, to get back real quick to Freddy's Nightmares, it was cool in the first one, we did see him, you know, the whole origin of him getting burned. And the others, while it had nothing to do with Freddy, what was cool is, I at least thought it was cool to see Freddy, because, as you know, he became everybody's buddy, so he's like a host, like the Crypt Keeper from, you know, Tales from the Crypt. So I enjoyed seeing Freddy. So between the two TV series, I most definitely enjoyed Freddy's Nightmares more than Friday the 13th, because Friday the 13th was an absolute letdown, because, you know, I've always been, as you know, I'm more of a Jason fan. Not saying any of the other series are any lesser, they're still great, but I was super let down, so maybe that's why I was harsher. But I do like that with Freddy's Nightmare. So again, if you never heard of it or you haven't seen it, try to seek it out in some form. Because like Tyler said, you can get it on VHS, but I don't know if YouTube, I don't know if there's a way to download it. I have no idea.
I'd imagine something like that is probably on YouTube somewhere. I can't imagine it being something that New Line Cinema is like, oh no, copyright issues, make sure you pull that. And like, dude, nobody's watching this.
Did they ever say there's a reason why they haven't tried to put on DVD? I know, like you said, some people might think, oh, it's just bad. But, I mean, was there other reasons?
No, I'd probably say New Line Cinema probably just decided, you know what? No, they're not. In the documentary, there's a good meaty segment about the show. They talk with the director of the show. They talk with Robert about the show. They talk about with Bob Shea about the show.
What were their thoughts? What did they think?
I mean, they all say that, you know, they, you know, I think Robert even said he felt like they just the censors were a big problem, so they couldn't do a lot of really scary stories. Like the pilot that you saw was probably about as scary as it got. They did crazy stories, you know, like, and they show sequences of, you know, turns out Freddy was this girl and she's having sex with this nerdy guy, and turns out the girl he's having sex with is Freddy, and, you know, throats being cut with beer bottles and stuff like that, talking hot dogs. But there's one of Brad Pitt losing his hand, and he goes, It's this really quick clip of Brad Pitt, like, with his hand's been melted down to the bone. And he goes, ah! It's so funny. But all of them say that, you know, we were just having fun. You know what? Have a naked woman show up on set. We'll film it. It's not going to be on TV. Can't make the cut, but who cares? We got the money. Let's do it. And,
oh, that's cool. I never knew.
You know, But it's a fun segment. But none of them, you know, championed the show and the work that they did. And some of them, the guy who directed Jason Part 6 was a director on the show. The guy who directed The Stand was a director on the show. Toby Hooper directed the pilot. And then I think there's another reputable, I think, horror movie director that did some of the episodes as well. And, you know, I mean, it's I'd say it's probably going to be one of those shows that you have to be a hardcore Freddy fan, like how I am about He-Man. You know, you own everything. Not everything is good, but you own it all. And that's probably what Freddy's Nightmares is like. You know, you really have to embrace Freddy making, you know, bad jokes and dancing around his boiler room and stuff like that to
entertain the show. Because I haven't seen it. Yeah, because that's what I mean. My memories are from my childhood. I haven't seen it since because I only seen him each time it was on TV. That's all. So I would love to see him again. But Nathan, did you experience those on TV, on tape, or at all?
You know, I didn't watch, I didn't catch anything of Freddy's Nightmares on TV or anything. Maybe those were some of the TV spots that I would see as a kid and, like, run out of the room or something. I imagine the reason that they're not on DVD is maybe, like, New Line just doesn't see any money in it. Like Tyler was saying, like, the only people that would buy it are, like, those hardcore fans. I mean, maybe they could make, like, some box set of it and charge out the ass to rip fans off, because that's usually what they like to do now. But yeah, I remember the Friday the 13th series more than I do the Freddy TV show, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and that's the thing. They put the Friday the 13th series, they put that on, like, DVD, and I would just, you know...
That's Paramount, though. Paramount, you know, they have milked, as much as they like to denounce that property made so much money, Paramount, you know, they're not proud of it, but they have milked and milked that franchise from, I mean, how many times have those films been released on DVD? I mean, they had the individual ones, they had the box sets, and they, you know, Blu-ray releases, and it's just, they, you know, they make money off of it. Paramount, you know, they're not...
You know, I can honestly see, I don't know what they would price it as, but I mean, I really would see Freddy's Nightmares. I could see that selling pretty well because, I mean, unlike that Friday the 13th series that had nothing to do with Jason, at least in some degree, first you're getting the origin of seeing Freddy getting burned, and otherwise you do get pieces of Freddy. And as for people who do love Freddy, that remember him, and don't, you know, remember seeing the series, I think they'd like it. And then let's say for some of these new generation, there are some new generation that are getting into all the old horror movies and stuff. Maybe they would like to see more Freddy. I just think it's, for me, it's an old.
But this is not what you introduce new viewers to.
No, I just meant for people, you know, who's going to all just saying, after, you know, the movies.
I can't imagine there really being much of a demand for Freddy's Nightmares. I'm serious. Like, given... When I watched the VHS, I'm like, yeah, man, this show sucks, man. You know, it's just, you know, and this, it's I've always had a hard time sitting down and watching 4, 5, and 6 all the way through. I mean, I just have never been able to sit down and watch them from beginning to end. To this day, I've always saw them in parts, you know, half of one, the other half here, or the end here and that. Freddy's Nightmares, I mean, this was made for TV, where there are extreme limitations as to what can be made on this show. What you're used to seeing on the big screen has now been, you know, castrated. You know, it's,
I don't know, it's
just
true. I just think for me, like, you know, wanting to, like I said, I can't remember all.
Well, you're strictly out of curiosity, I get that. I'm just saying that, you know, don't overhype it so Freddy much.
Well, not like that. I just wonder how many Freddy fans are out there who would like to see him again after all these years. Who you know, there's people that love knowing every little bit. Anything that something's been done. I'm sure that maybe there's those Freddy fans who don't remember it, or maybe seen parts of it would think, you know, I do want to see what was Freddy doing in every episode. People just get kicks out of stuff, and I know I'd like to, just because I'm only...
Well, I mean, I guess that there would be one merit, is that if you had the entire series, you could watch all the host segments with Freddy at the beginning and the end of the show.
That's what I mean. Even if you hate the show itself, at least you get to see, like you said, the Freddy segments. But I mean, who can't get enough Freddy?
This was another thing, and Nathan knows this one too. That they said when they decided they were going to do the show, they were told it was going to come on late at night, which meant that the subject matter could, you know, be risque. It could be sexual. It could be violent. Mm-hmm. But the show would get played in syndication at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the Bible Belts. And, you know, that was part of the problem, is that, you know, there was no control over where local cable stations were playing, you know, Freddy's Nightmares, where it was intended for a mature audience, but would be playing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when kids are coming from school, and you're seeing this girl riding this dork that turns out it's Freddy Krueger in a very sexual manner.
Yeah, because again, going by a fuzzy memory, which maybe I'm wrong, but I thought I always remember catching it Saturday nights at 11 o'clock at night. That's when I
Which is where it should have come on.
Yeah, and that's when I thought I remembered seeing it when it was first on, with Saturday nights at 11 o'clock, and it was just once a week. And, well, again, this is going by way back when, so I have no clue. Like you said, when it got syndicated and popped in other places, just maybe those weird time zones, like, oh, I couldn't imagine that being at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, that's bizarre. Yeah, I guess it would cause some problems.
That's why you got to get that documentary, man. Get on it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to order off of eBay, I guess. I'll finally have to do some eBay. And it seems, but, you know, well, this episode, it's obviously been pretty focused on pretty much Nightmare on Elm Street. We still, I think, do have time to where we were going to rank our Universal monsters, because that was another thing we were going to do. We're going old school, and trust me, people, they still like some of the old school stuff, Universal monsters. But Nathan, I mean, you know, some of the most iconic. I mean, we have Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula, the Mummy. I mean, which ones are so memorable to you? How do you rank them?
Are we doing we're doing top five, top three? What's the
top three?
Oh, top three.
You said three.
Did I? Oh, my fault. I was thinking five because I was just hitting some more. But yeah, go ahead with three if you're going to take three. Because I was thinking, well, like I said, I was like, well, there's Wolfman, there's Mummy.
Phantom of the Opera, Invisible Man, Bride of Frankenstein.
Well, the main five I always think of is, well, the monster / you know, Frankenstein.
Okay, if you want to do it that way, fine.
And then Wolfman, and then Creature from Black Lagoon, the Mummy. So, but go ahead. I want five.
I'll give you three. Three? Okay. Well, all right, we're going to do five.
Okay.
That's what Joe wants, so we'll just do what Joe wants.
All right,
take
Joe.
His ball and go home.
Doesn't know who Toby Hooper is, but
yeah, okay. It's a five. Throwing out demands on how we're going to rank somebody. Yeah, I can't tell you. What Toby Hooper do? He directed Towering Inferno?
All right, five. Here we go. Man, on the spot. I'm going to probably do number five, Wolfman. Probably go number four. Man, it's probably going to be easier for me to do three. I'm going to go three. You guys do five.
Okay, I was going to say, when you do your three, are they going to be by personal favorites, or like how you rank them and like who could be the most intimidating? Like, how are you ranking? Because you could do.
I'm doing personal favorite. That's how I'm doing mine.
Yeah, mine will be personal favorites.
Okay.
All right, so I'll number three would be Dracula, because I mean, just man, the setting, the mood. You know, we're talking about another character here that's like similar to Freddy. You know, you have a couple of these monsters that don't really speak or anything, so he's like psychologically messing with you. So he's my number three. Number two would be Frankenstein, because that's classic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing about those films back then, like the effort, so much effort. I'm kind of curious, like when all these slashers started coming out in the 80s, if you know, there were a group of guys that were sitting around kind of like we are now, and it's like, you know what, like, these movies are trash, and I like the Universal films, like, they just tried more. I'm kind of curious if there was that same sort of discussion.
I bet. You're probably right, yeah.
But number one, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Like, out of all of them, because I rewatched them a couple years ago, like, Creature, for me, is just the pacing of it. Just, I'm afraid of the water anyway, because I can't swim. There's your Toby Hooper for me, I guess, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we've all had and shared we've all revealed embarrassing secrets on this podcast here.
Yeah, the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Speaking of him, I mean, I think they did a pretty freaky job of him in Monster Squad. Speaking of Monster Squad from earlier,
yeah,
he was probably one of the most memorable, spooky ones from that movie. Because, like, as for the Mummy, I remember they made him like. I've never been petrified of the Mummy in general, but they kind of basically showed what most people thought. just unravel him. He's dust, he's bones, he's done. And that's what they did in Monster Squad. Got a bandage shot at
him. I know, seeing the mummy in the little kid's room from the Monster Squad, like when his dad opens the closet, ooh, look at that scary, and there's the mummy just kind of sitting there and kind of slowly wakes up. You're like, oh, dear God. You know, it was the way it was, back to visual lighting, the way that lighting inside that closet was just, you know, highlighting the mummy's face as it slowly kind of woke up and look at the boy. It was like, dude, how the hell did that mummy get in your closet?
Exactly. You know? Now that, yes, things like that, spooky. It's just like, yeah, after a while, when you think about some things like, who's really going to be intimidating? You know, because you're right, there's favorites I have, and I'll go ahead and I'm going to give you a little rank on, I guess, who I would be most frightened to face, if you will. And I know that, like I said, we're all going to have different choices, but I'm going to go with five. And the fifth one, I'm putting the mummy, because, I mean, beyond just never being afraid of him, like, how's he ever going to catch me? I mean, you're never going to catch me if I run. You're just going to limp and slowly slough along, so I'm not scared of you. The other one that, don't shoot me when I say this, but Frankenstein, you know, monster, he's never going to catch me either. He's scary as hell. If I'm face-to-face with him, I'm going to die, probably.
Not if you watch Robert De Niro's version.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's
other versions. Tear out your heart.
But, you know, going by the universal ones that we're doing, he's slow, so I'm not frightened of him. But then we go to Creature from Black Lagoon. He's third because he is scary. Hell, if you're around water, you're dead. And plus, this guy can still chase you. I mean, it's a creature, and creatures are scary. So I just hate the thought of that. And then it comes between Wolfman and Dracula. And I'm like, okay, well, with Wolfman, if he's at least human at one point, maybe I got a chance of, you know, obviously doing something against him. But if he's in his wolf form, all I can do is kill him with a silver bullet. I better have one hell of a shot. I better have that silver to stop him. And then you go to Dracula. Now, there's many ways to kill him. Dracula, I mean, there's garlic, there's sunlight, there's holy water, there's a stake into the heart. So that's why with those two, I'm flipping it around. I'm putting Dracula at number two, even though, yes, he turned to a bat and stuff, and the Wolfman, just because the Wolfman, I feel like I could never kill him. If he was in that wolf form, I would never be able to have that shot to shoot him in his heart and kill him with a silver bullet. I would be dead. So of that intimidation forms, Wolfman would be number one because I couldn't kill him. At least with Dracula, I could have a whole lot of stuff that maybe I could keep him at bay. You know, garlic, holy water, everything. Maybe I have a chance. But that's how I ranked them for my five, was by fear factor, I guess. So we all have our different way of doing it. Like Tyler, I know you're in it, probably a whole different way. But that's my five from fear factor.
I'm just going to do three.
Okay.
And I'm probably number three is going to be the Wolfman. I kind of find the Wolfman to be the big, you know, the badass of the Universal Monsters. Like, I mean, like, you know, because I like, I, as much as people dump on it, I thought Joe Johnston's The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro and Anthony Hopkins, I thought it was a fun film. And I love seeing Rick Baker's makeup effects, very reminiscent of the original Wolfman, and being portrayed as like, that's what you want to see the Wolfman doing, running through the woods, tearing people apart, tearing out their stomach, and he's, you know, he's got, you know, they're like part of their intestines like hanging out of his mouth and stuff like that. But the Wolfman in general, I just werewolves and things like that, because I just have always had an affinity for some of the classic werewolf films. But the Wolfman is my number three. Number two is Dracula, mainly because of the original Dracula film, Bela Lugosi. I would just always thought it was, I love the opening of that film. The first 15-20 minutes of that film, where it opens up in Transylvania with Renfield riding up in that old horse and carriage up to the mountains of Transylvania, and he stops that little inn slash pub, and just the whole atmosphere of it, him heading up to the castle and at night, and it's just just classic gothic horror. And then number one is my introduction to the Universal Monsters, and still remains to this day, my number one is Creature from the Black Lagoon. I anytime the Universal Monsters have popped up in my life, like in commercials, advertising, artwork, I'm always looking, where's the Gill Man at? Yeah. And if it's just like Dracula, Wolfman, Franks, I'm like, dude, what the hell, man? Where's Creature from the Black Lagoon? This is not the full lot of Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
I found Creature to be quite scary to me as a kid because I forgot what the name of these books were, but if you and some people who listen to this may know what they are, but there were these black and white books with an orange back on the back, and it was books called Wolfman, Vampires. There was one called Creature from the Black Lagoon, and it was a book that showcased all three creature films plus behind the scenes stuff of those films. And there was the one about vampires showcased about the first Dracula and the various vampire films throughout the years. But these were old books, old musty books, and there was a whole collection of them. And that's how I was introduced to Creature from the Black Lagoon, which was down at the local library here just down the road from me. And I just found it to be fascinating. Of course, when I finally saw the movie on VHS, I fell asleep during it because I just found it as a child very slow paced. All of them, I thought they were all slow paced as a kid. Not now, of course, but Creature's always been my favorite. Has been, and I, me and Nathan both had the good fortune of meeting Rico Browning, who played him in the film, who did a lot of the swimming sequences and stuff like that. So,
oh wow, when did you guys meet him?
Back in 2012, I think.
How old was the guy?
The first year we went to Mad Monster, right?
Yeah, the first year we went to Mad Monster, he was probably in his 70s.
Okay, because I was wondering, I was like, yeah, he's probably up there in age, but that must have been an awesome thing to see him in person.
But he was alert and everything, and I wish I had done more research at the time, because I got him confused with the guy who did a lot of the land work, because there's two guys who played him in the film, and he did the swimming sequences, and I think some of the on land stuff, but he did what most people are aware of, the swimming through the water, chasing after that beautiful and sexy as hell Julie Adams in the film. But that was such an overwhelming experience for me, Nathan, but I really wish I had taken more time to talk to him and ask him more questions about that, because We'd seen so many great people during that weekend. We really just didn't take full advantage, and that was oddly enough because Creature is my favorite Universal monster. But we got his autograph, got his picture with him, talked to him for a few moments. But glad to say that we got to meet one of the original Universal monsters. I mean,
yeah, it was a really awesome experience.
Yeah,
yeah, because I was gonna say, are any of the others alive? The actors? I mean,
No, Boris is dead, Bella's dead, Lon Chaney's dead. Maybe the other guy who played Creature in the outfit, maybe he's still alive, possibly. But
I know with some of their kids that have written books about their parents, I think they tend to, they're the ones that show up to the conventions most of the time now, I think.
Yeah, yeah, people who are offsprings of a lot of these, which is, unfortunately, that's the only way we're going to get any information out of them, and they're a lot older, too.
Pretty much. So, well, we got two people that both had Creature from the Black Lagoon as their number one. Mine was a completely different rant, but that's what's cool about the show. Like I said, we'll go into whole different tangents. One time somebody's talking about this, talking about that. You know, when I'm talking about something, I'm just off the walls. And plus, I don't know the directors, I don't know the producers, the writers. So I'm going to be the big...
Much of anything else, for that matter.
Exactly. I am the weakest link on this show when it comes to horror movies or any movies. And when it comes to directors, producers, Joe is going to be the biggest loser. So trust me, anytime we do... What the hell just happened there? Oh, I'm sorry. I just seen Doug. He just popped up, and then Freddy's on the Beyond Retro.
It's been there the whole time.
Has it? I just thought sometimes it was on and off at times, but that's kind of cool. But
jump here, Joe. He's coming for you.
Exactly. He's right there. So, yeah, so I am definitely...
He's coming to customize you in your dreams.
I guess. So remember that. I am the one that's going to be the least knowledgeable when it comes to any of the producers, writers, and stuff like that. I hope I at least give a good opinion when it comes to the movies and characters. But, yeah, I've never been that's not my strong suit. Never has been, unfortunately.
Well, we'll have to test that again when we do Friday the 13th, because you, being such the Friday junkie, claim to know so much about the
You know, and
series.
That's what's weird. Like I said, as for the movies itself, I pretty much will know a whole lot. But, yep. Sure enough, you're going to ask, like, who wrote this? Who did this? Yep, Joe's going to fail on that, too. I've always known more the movie of what's going on than the thing.
All right, I'm going to test Joe's knowledge here. All right, I'm going to start with a baby question, because Nathan should be able to get this. All right, who directed the first Friday the 13th?
That's Sean Cunningham.
How about that? All right, we're gonna move up the board here.
I'm not gonna part two.
See, the dogs are happy.
About Freddy. He's got them all going.
Thanks. Celebrating, Jill got one right. That's the cheering for me like Joe actually got a question right.
Look, they're like, oh my God, he did it.
That officially right there, when Nathan comes back, you got to let him know that's my dog pound, like in the old days. And they're going, hoo, 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 hoo. So I got some cheers. I got some respect. But, yeah. But,
oh, good.
Has he got a couple big boys over there?
They're not real big dogs, but they're good-sized dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're not like giant, you know, German Shepherds or anything like that.
Oh, there's Nathan. Yeah, Nathan, I was just telling Tyler.
I'm back. Sorry about that, guys.
That's okay. I was just letting Tyler know. I said, that's my dog pound. Like, they were like, hoo, 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 when Joe got a question right. So they were cheering.
Yeah, I mean, all this horror talk's got them excited. And now I guess they're hearing things that aren't outside. Unless he's out there.
All right, well, Tyler, you going to hit me with a question I can lose now? Because like I said, that's the only one.
Yeah, all right. Now, all right. Who directed part 2 and 3?
Nope. Don't know.
Nathan,
I don't have a clue.
Man, now I'm just gonna kind of be like a weak link too, because the names escape me.
Oh well. All moment. Right. Well, I'll let that one slide then. All right. It's always fun to ask random trivia questions here, real quick. All right. Then tell me. All right. Both of you guys are big fans of part 4, so maybe I got to do something about part 4 real quick. All right, well, who directed part 4?
I don't know
either. You're going to have to
get questions.
You're making
us
look bad. You're making us look bad, Tyler. You got to stop.
It's easy to make me look bad. I told you, I'm up front. I will not know any of these directors. I got lucky with the first one. I'll know, like, maybe I think some of the others, but no, I'm going to lose every single time.
Yeah, well, the thing with Tyler, he's still trapped with, like, all of that stuff. He remembers names and, like, bit character names, and I'm just like,
it's what he said before when we did an episode.
Here we go again. Sorry, guys.
Don't worry. It's fine, bud. It's fine.
He's got his bargain. Coffee was restless through the whole end of the show. That's why I had to go to non-camera mode, because I had to get her something to eat. I have to get her some stuff here in a couple minutes, too.
Oh, no worries. We'll start wrapping up as soon as Nathan comes back. We'll do our send-offs and everything, so all the dogs can be taken care of.
Exactly. But as Nathan was bringing up earlier, he's like, Tyler's the steel trap, and I always say I'm the rusted box. I'm not going to know half the stuff. I might forget some things, but, yeah, that's when Joe's memory is, it's right out there.
He's had a lot of time to get to know the steel trap. I mean, because I've been doing it since, you know, since we met. I mean, I just remember stuff. I just studied films and just remembered all this stuff. It's just, you know, not like out of like sheer boredom. I just, you know, I kept rewatching these films all the time. So
yeah, like I said, you're the steel trap. I'm the rusted box. There's only certain things that maybe I really absorbed. Maybe on certain video games, I would get goofy obsessed. But yeah. Well, I think that's about. I was gonna say it's about probably time to wrap up, but we'll wait till he gets back and you can wrap it up then.
All right. Well, then I guess next week, just to let everyone know, we'll be doing. Well, it's Friday the 13th, so we're going to be doing a Hellraiser retrospective.
Right. No, yeah, definitely Friday the 13th next week. We're going to be talking Friday the 13th, and we'll be talking about Friday the 13th for the final chapter. So
yeah,
that's next week's episode. So you will definitely be in and out for the movie of talking all the, you know, the details, and probably won't be doing a lot about who directed, who wrote it, and all that stuff, because I'll probably have to.
No, that would just completely just came up out. You know, that's me being the trivia nerd that I am. So. Yeah.
So that'll be a good one.
I don't want to come off as one of those guys who at last, like, hang on now, I got a fun fact about that. And just completely break the conversation just to share. You're like, okay, that's great. You know trivia that, you know, makes us sound, you know, dumber for having now listened to it. You know, it just,
well,
you know.
One quick other final thing. In the live chat room, we had Spycore, evil master of untouchable combat. He said, careful what you wish for when you're talking reviving old horror characters. So there might be certain ones he doesn't want to see revived, but I do appreciate you with that comment, Spycore, and Doongy being in the chat room. We do appreciate you guys joining for the show. Like I said, we always encourage, anytime you guys have something you want to ask, something you want to say, that we'll definitely cover it. We'll bring it up. We won't leave you hanging. I know we almost left you hanging toward the end of the show, but still got you. But well, it was good. It was a good episode. Like I said, we really went on about Nightmare on Street a while, and then we got on a little side rant of it. But that's what it's about. It's always it's horror related, no matter what. That's what it is. So
yeah, it's all improvisation. You know, improvisation on this podcast. You know, we have an idea, and it just takes off. You know, we don't want to stick to bullet points. We want to sound like what you're listening to is just guys hanging out talking movies. Like, yeah, buddies hanging out, you know?
It's so easy to just, like, veer off into some other conversation.
Yeah. That's how it is. That's just what happens when you talk. So, but, well, go ahead, Nathan. You want to wrap us up?
Yeah, I guess I'll just apologize again to anyone that had to hear any sort of loud barking in the last 5 minutes. Yeah, I mean, you guys pretty much... nailed everything. I'm terrible at the send-offs. I'm not good at this at all.
That's fine, man. Like I said, I mean, there's always a first for everything, and the more we do it, the more familiar you get with it. So, I mean, there's nothing terrible about anything. Like I said, it's just, yeah, that's how we flow. So, Tyler, did you want to say anything before we hop off the show?
People want to get in touch with us and share their thoughts. I mean, all of us are on Facebook. You can post comments on the YouTube channel or on the YouTube links that are what the episodes are on. And let us know what you think. If you don't like what we have to say, let us know. If you do like it, let us know. If you want us to cover something particular, let us know. We want fan participation. We encourage it, and we're not going to censor people because you disagree with us or you think I'm stupid because I like this and you agree with Nathan and Joe's. It's like, no, that's perfectly fine. We're not out to troll people and make sure that they're, thrown in a box and gagged and bagged so they don't have a word. You know, we want to encourage people that if you think, you know what, if we're nuts for liking the original Nightmare on Elm Street over the remake, then you know what, I'm damn proud to be crazy then.
There you go. So, and where did you want to tell them to go on Facebook so they know where to,
We post the episodes on the Beyond Retro Facebook page. Look up Beyond Retro with, I think, Doug Turner is the name that the account that the episodes are posted on YouTube if you're looking for them for like last week in the first episode. And of course go to Nathan's Facebook page. He posts the links. Joe's Facebook page, he posts them. I post them on mine. So, and they will be available to download as well too on Podbean. And that, we post those links later on in the week when, Doug has got those edited and ready to go. So you can listen to us on your car ride home from work or at the gym or, driving home from a bad date, you know, taking a girl to see a really bad horror movie and you still didn't get any action. So you listen to us on the way home.
Yeah, and then you'll feel better about yourself because you can swim and I can't.
Yeah, and I had to sleep in the same bed with my brother to make me feel a little bit more secure from Freddy Krueger, exactly. Who was 4 years younger than me. So,
right, you were putting him as bait to get killed. That's terrible, but well,
yeah.
I guess you got to do what you got to do to survive.
I did that one other time in the backyard when one of the neighbor's dogs came over the fence, and it was this big black and brown dog, and I remember we both saw it and we ran, and my brother tripped. I just stopped and looked at him, and I just kept running, and I just left him. He likes to bring that up to this day that I was such a rotten older brother for leaving him for the dogs. And what the dog just stood there. He didn't do anything, but
we were terrified. That's horrible. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to have to use that in the future.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, it's been a great episode, so I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next week, same time, 6:30. So we'll be here next week, Friday 13th, Part 4, celebrating our horror month on Beyond Retro. So catch you guys next week.
See you guys.
Hey. Help me. Get me out of here. My God, this man's not dead.